Welcome back to another episode. I think we're at 269. Well, another exciting, interesting week. A number of stories, which all are different, but somehow I think all are connected, as so the universe works, I guess. That's how Buddha would have it, I guess, right? Everything's connected. England, merry old England, Great Britain, United Kingdom, New World Order, the occult octopus, whatever you want to call it, Airstrip 1, I think, 1984. Great Britain, they installed a new prime minister, Liz Truss, short-lived premiership, less than 2 months, I think, have that right?
Yep.
Financial problems, supposedly, with the bonds and proposed tax cut. Of course, you know, England, like the rest of the world, has become a economic basket case with the lockdowns and the wars, the energy shortages that are contrived, created so we can support the neoliberal order in Eurasia, supposedly. That's what we were told. And I think it, oddly enough, they were being honest about that. Whatever the neoliberal rules-based system is, of course, it's internal debt, slavery, transvestitism, transgenderism, whatever you want to call it, sodomy, and teaching children the wonders of homosexuality. That's what the neoliberal order all the time. Well, it used to be they'd offer consumerism with that. Now they're pulling that rug from under us, which was, I think, there was the game plan, I suppose. You corrupt people's sexual morality and they become slaves and docile slaves you can manipulate. But anyway, back to Great Britain. They've selected a new prime minister, a very English name, Rishi Sunak. ethnicity is an Indian. Of course, maybe he's a transplant from the British days of the British Raj. So now the head of Great Britain's parliamentary system is an Indian ethnic national. I think he just recently had a green card in the United States. This is like, and it's not so much not so much going to, you know, criticize Indians per se, or why there's so many Indians and Pakis and other groups in England, and England is losing its ethnic identity. That's what England means. It's the, you know, basically it's Angleland. This is a product of mass immigration, globalism itself. He himself is a globalist. He's like a Goldman Sachs alumnus, so he's perfect for the current system installed there to, keep the looting going, I guess, the looting phase of the project, destruction of Western civilization. So it is telling that he'd be picked. I think Liz Truss bragged that there wasn't one white male in her cabinet or something. You know, so I guess this is sort of the the warnings that somebody has said, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, what would happen when they started bringing in so many people from the former empire. This is I guess the end result. This is I guess you could say end stage capitalism, I guess, or democracy. So what's your take on the new prime minister?
Well, I'm in complete agreement with you. This, what you're seeing is the achievement of the agenda. There was some sophistry about demographics, just like there was in the US, you know, when we changed our demographic immigration policies. What this individual has been brought in to do. I mean, it's not just the symbolism of, a dark-skinned Indian person being prime minister. I mean, we had that in the United States with Obama, basically, you know. But it's that it will make it more difficult. And the reason I thought that they had the whole Liz Truss transfer over to this individual is that now the government policies, which will be freezing and starving the Anglo-Saxon English and everyone else too as well, but over the next 6 or 7 months, to complain will be racist, because this individual is going to bring, how do you pronounce his name, his last name? Because I have no luck.
I guess it's Sunak.
Sunak?
Yeah.
I mean, Sunak, being a globalist and a Goldman Sachs alumni, there's no question what his approach is going to be to the whining Anglo-Saxons who are freezing and starving. He's just going to tell them to suck it up, and this is good for the planet, and we have to stop the Hitlerian Putin So he'll just rationalize it, you know, right into the last Anglo-Saxon. You know, I am concerned about a organized genocide of Europeans. You know, I think the events of the last 3 years look pretty much in a pattern to me. It all heads into one direction, which is now that the vaccine is in so many of them, they're going to set up the, you know, a situation where the immune systems are going to be challenged and are designed to fail. So, you know, we brought Sunak in. He will, you know, be the brown skinned face with a smile of genocide. And I think this is supposed to keep the starving and freezing Anglo-Saxons from rebelling. I hope that the Anglo-Saxons in England and everyone else, because obviously the other minority ethnicities are also going to be suffering in the coming months. I hope everyone else sees through this and just sees him as a deliberate, you know, distraction from the fact that the British oligarchs, I mean, why don't we talk about the House of Rothschild for everything and all this, have condoned and promoted this moment in time where, you know, you're not going to have enough energy to heat the homes. You're not going to have enough food to meet the needs of all of the population, and the immune systems are not in great shape. So, you know, that's my take on it. I just see him as another element of a genocide.
Yeah, it is telling that, of course, he does come from the Tories, the so-called Conservative Party, Boris Johnson's party. And this was a party that was supposedly elected to reverse immigration policy that the Labour Party had instituted really in earnest in the 90s. I think who was it who said that their objective was to cram diversity into the face of the English people? And that was, so they opened up, of course, the immigration policy under the Labourites was Barbara Roche, who's a Jewish. And she actually said that her number one issue is anti-Semitism, not the well-being, the welfare of the realm of the British people. It's that issue. Again, it goes to why these people simply cannot be trusted in positions of authority, whether it's cultural, political, economic, because they're so ethnocentric and narrow in their an outlook, and, you know, neurotic and paranoid to speak. And
let me interrupt for a second. I mean, you have a situation when she made that claim, you had a situation where the Jews in England had a massively undemocratic position of power, financial control, media control, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea when she made the statement, because I recall, you know, so that was just a real clear example where the concern over anti-Semitic or the charge of anti-Semitism is used as a distraction to keep people from talking about the undemocratic nature of the media and financial power that Jewish people possess. And so I was just gonna say that it would be really handy for there to be just a set of facts of the nature of the undemocratic power, you know, what percentage of media people, college professors, you know, the people inside the U.S. intelligence agencies, you know, that are visible, just have these facts on hand and then just say, look, we want to be able to discuss the undemocratic nature of this. And if we're concerned about this charge of anti-Semitism, then all this does is keep us from having a reasonable discussion about the nature of our democracy. So that's how I would respond to her, you know, the concern that she claims to have.
Well, it all goes to the definition of anti-Semitism. Everything comes down that redounds to anti-Semitism. It seems to pop up everywhere. And I think what it is the idea is the way you fight anti-Semitism is you make sure that the United Kingdom and any other country no longer has any ethnic homogeneity or culture homogeneity. And you create a sort of a babble. And so in your own perverse way, this is the way you combat anti-Semitism is you deny the native population a sense of identity. And that's what the mass immigration is, of course, is designed to do. So, you know, change the country's demographics, make it more manipulable or malleable or governable in their eyes again, we're picking on Mr. Sunak, saying we're not anti-Indian. He is just a functionary. He is a man from nowhere. Now there is some talk because the ethnicity, because basically, as we mentioned last week, everyone except ethnic whites can talk about ethnicity, can obsess on it. And it is an ethnic spoils game, so that can be manipulated. Politics is ethnic spoils, a spoil system. But again, he is, as you say, Goldman Sachs alumnus. He's reportedly worth more than the king. So what's the point of being king if there's someone richer than you, right? Of course, he works for Goldman Sachs, which is a Rothschild interest, Jewish banking, cosmopolitan, that sort of thing. So someone like this who owns mansions throughout the world, obviously his loyalty, he's not going to identify as being particularly a British subject. And this is a problem, a question of loyalty and to the land you come from. And this is something that Enoch Powell in the late 60s brought up in his Rivers of Blood speech. He didn't really address the Jewish angle because maybe it was more obscure then, more clear now. But again, it's busy. So what I was saying was Enoch Powell, in his Rivers of Blood, he kind of addressed this issue back in 1968, talked about the mass migration of the subjects of the empire back to the British Isles, or change the demographic, therefore, change England forever. And we're seeing that now. But again, as far as Mr. Sunak is, he's one of these globalist bankers, technocrat, who's taken over, installed, and the fact, his background, the fact that the laborites, Tony Blair's labor bragged about, again, rubbing the nose of British in diversity. This was the objective that they wanted. And so again, you criticize this, you're either guilty of racism, despite the fact that the policies are obviously, they're bankrupting, destroying what remains of British sovereignty in the economy. We see that, throughout the European Union, even here in the United States. It is telling. We had another story, which was entertaining. The MSNBC had a town hall meeting with some Pennsylvania voters that I guess didn't go to script, or maybe there wasn't a script. That was the problem. they usually script these things, but it was Elise Jordan, who was, interesting enough, it was Michael Hastings' widow, the reporter who died in an unfortunate car accident. I guess it was 8-9 years ago. Car blew up because he was drinking too much or taking drugs or something. That was the explanation. Odd coupling. He's supposedly investigative muckraking reporter, and she was a former employee of the National Security Council. But nevertheless, he'd written some stuff about Stanley McChrystal, and not too long after his car blows up, General Stanley McChrystal. But anyway, get back to this. At least Jordan, she was conducting this. I guess they call it a town hall of typical Pennsylvania voters. And I think they started talking about the January 6th stuff, and they schooled her on the true story. She was just repeating the official narrative, which was completely made up. She claimed that officers were killed. That didn't happen. Of course, they reminded her of that. She claimed that Trump protesters were throwing human excrement at the walls. They corrected her on that. She called it an insurrection. They corrected her on that, saying it was just a protest. And they didn't storm the Capitol. They said, we saw videos where they were invited in, and she just seemed a little dismayed by it. I don't know whether she actually thought that was the case or just repeating the narrative. Nevertheless, it was entertaining to watch as these typical Republican voters. I don't know, they're Republican, there's Pennsylvania voters, reminded her, they're not really impressed with the January 6th committee hearings. They're not worried about an insurrection. They're worried about things like, unemployment and price inflation and shortages. But it was interesting to show what there's such a divide between what the media is presenting and what people understand what's going on. So maybe it's an indication that their whole propaganda machine just doesn't work. It isn't getting traction in the public, or at least within that cohort or demographic group, which would be white, Americans, because they're all seem to be young, like maybe over age 25, most middle-aged, the people she was talking to.
The greatest thing I'd ever seen in my life. Clear example of diminishing returns, where when you try to use the propaganda memes now against a group of European Americans, there is skepticism. And it doesn't need to be too much skepticism, just a little bit, a few facts that are contradicting the narrative, and you saw what happens. So this is a great thing. And I think that as we go forward, it'll just be more and more the case. In fact, I kind of wonder what the strategy will be of mainstream media when these things become chronic, because representative of the government narrative really can't appear anywhere in public now without being ridiculed. You can't go to baseball games. You can't really be in the public square at this point. And so that is going to happen more and more. And I think it's going to happen in terms of particularly the media presentations concerning vaccine damage as we go forward. I think it's just, there really is, I'm always optimistic about this, but I am sensing that the effects of the independent media and the obvious and dangerous lies that are coming out of legacy media are really reaching kind of a tipping point in the population where there's enough skeptics that we're getting to that moment where the people in the room are not intimidated anymore by, the group telling them that, black is white or yes is no. All you need is one or two strong skeptics to stand up in every room, and the people who are on the fence will join them, as happened in that case. So this could be, the effects of the exposure of government activities and nefarious government activities that really began with 9/11. So that was just a great moment. And, again, it just hope it inspires more and more people to really not let them make public statements. If they're going to make these statements, they should do it in closed rooms with teleprompters so that everyone knows, just tacitly understands that these aren't the ideas of the public.
Yeah, there's Peter Quinones posted this on his Substack. I read it regarding this story. He goes, "I see a regime reporter promoting the regime's narrative to a group of people who are having none of it. They know what they saw, what their eyes saw. They know what they experienced firsthand. The regime mouthpiece even repeats the regime's lie that a Capitol police officer died during the event. The people on the panel quickly correct her. Here's my question. How can these two groups ever achieve unity? The regime criminals promote lies and imprison people for walking through a building they unironically call the people's house. On the other side are people refusing to accept their falsehoods and correcting the regime and the regimist in real time. How do you create unity between two groups who live in such a different realities, especially when one has the power to imprison and kill others at will and spin narratives that are so many take as gospel? There is no unity to be had. Anyone who says otherwise is a false prophet."
Really well said. Really and well said. That's exactly
another
correct.
Thing was highlighted was this meeting that the president, there was a question and answer session at the White House with this transgender person. Did you see that? Daryl McIlvaney or something is his name.
I didn't see it. I heard about it.
And that's what he's asking questions to this, to the president. And it's just absurdist in its own way. I don't know if the White House is being trolled. They don't know it by this individual. He's transitioning to a female. And he claims he's transitioned, whatever that means. And he got the president to go on record saying he's against laws banning reassignment surgery. States don't have the right to do it. In fact, the president called it immoral to ban, the chemical castration, the literal castration, mutilation of children, the poisoning with so-called puberty blockers, hormonal treatments, chemotherapy drugs, these things. Well, I don't know, the president isn't of his own mind anymore. So whatever, what he says, whatever it's worth, whatever. He says, when you have a man in the White House who thinks it's immoral to prohibit or regulate such behavior, you really have two societies, because what he's promoting is so perverse and so demonic. How do you take him seriously?
This meeting is being recorded.
I had to set the recording again.
Okay.
It's something so bizarre, so demonic, perverse, And like I said, it just shows that the people who support this and people who are skeptical about transitioning, particularly with children, it's a divide there. Although I think it's overstated, because if you look at the polling, more than 80% are against doing these things to children. But yet the Democratic Party is out there, but the White House is putting itself on the line, putting itself out there, expending its political capital, supporting it. And so I really think that Biden and company are really out of touch on this issue, and perhaps it's a bridge too far.
I agree completely. And I think that they will create more rebellion than, obedience with this approach. They're trying to, destroy sort of biologic health and create creatures, because they really aren't natural humans. I mean, at the end of the process, they have us within, what would be something that would be genetically altered. And biologically altered. You'd have the hormone blockers, the beings that would come out of what they're trying to achieve wouldn't really be normal humans. So this is transhumanism, and I think that it's diminishing returns. I just think that so many people are sort of skeptical about this, that the more they push it, the more you're just going to have rebellion. I also think that they're trying to do it now because I suspect that the vaccine is part of this process, that there will be aspects of the vaccination damage that will lead to, more and more sort of government control over biology. Just as an example, if you saw the latest birth statistics from Sweden and Germany, the catastrophic reduction in births is continuing and seemingly accelerating. So it is very clear to me anyway, that the vaccines are a kind of perverted birth control, and all of this will lead to an end of sort of the biologically natural humans, and I think government will try to onset to fill the gap with test tube babies that are designed using the CRISPR technology. These are they're not humans plus, these are humans minus, and so that's what Brave New World, the Delta class, we've talked about this 100 times. So this is all what is occurring now. And I just think that there's enough people, particularly in the group that didn't take the vaccine, that are skeptical regarding this, that they're going to be able to think clearly. And this stuff will have no chance of being a political winner. There's going to be rebellion against this. And I'm looking forward to the upcoming, elections to see if it'll already start to break through into actually results in the ballot box.
Yeah. Yeah, like Humanity Plus, it's like Extra Strength Tide or something. I love that marketing. It's like Humanity Plus. Now, twice the stain fighting action. Give me a break.
With one half the sperm count.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's of course on that theme or topic, we had the spectacle of Stacey Abrams, who never fails to deliver. Stacey Abrams, she's sort of this, she's a species of politician. For one thing is she's a female and she's black, so no one has ever told her she's stupid. So they go off and they talk about things. That's why some of these black politicians, particularly the female politicians, say the dumbest things, because they're anointed or they're special now because they're a twofer. They're black and they're women, and you can't criticize them. It was a time people just tell them to shut up. You're a moron, but she doesn't know she's stupid, I guess. But she was on MSNBC Morning Joe. And I think Mike Barnicle was the guest host, or at least one, her interlocutor. And she's running for governor of Georgia. She thinks she's the governor of Georgia. She's an election denier, by the way. She denied she lost the election. But she's a Democrat candidate for governor of Georgia. And they were talking about the economy. And Mike Barnicle said, while abortion is an issue, it's nowhere reaches the level of interest in voters in terms of the cost of gas, food, et cetera. Immediately, Abrams interjected and said, abortion is an economic issue. She suggested that children are a financial burden and they can be dealt with through abortion. So basically, killing your children or unborn children is a hedge against inflation. Let's be clear, having children is why you're worried about your price for gas. It's when you're concerned about how much food costs, Abrams said. For women, this is not a reductive issue. You can't divorce being forced to carry on an unwanted pregnancy from the economic realities of having a child. Wow, this is basically this is their playbook: destroy the economy, drive hardworking people into poverty, and then promote abortion or infanticide, killing babies as a solution to the inflation issue, which is created, of course, by the by Washington and the Treasury Department and the central bank, the Fed. This is a similar outlook, though. You know, write it off for being stupid. But Janet Yellen said a similar thing. She's our Treasury Secretary and former chairman of the Federal Reserve. She said that abortion was good for the economy because it frees women up to go work, as if they're not working when they're having children, I guess, or gaining any productive activity, meaningful activity, having children, raising children. So she thinks as long as you're working in a cubicle somewhere and you're childless and your womb is medicated or scarred from multiple abortions, but as long as you can produce spreadsheets for a Fortune 500 company, that's what productivity is. What this really reveals, though, is an overall outlook of an economic point of view or view of humanity. So while Stacey Abrams is maybe stupid, she is reflecting ethic or value system that our economic and our political system is promoting. Neoliberalism, which is basically anti-human, anti-child, anti-family, and ultimately it's a death cult.
It's depopulation, because her logic is very clear. If you want to really get control over inflation, you simply want to reduce the population to zero. Then there would be no inflation, and declare victory and go home. So
and the regime is a Moloch worshiper. They worship Moloch, don't they?
Well, they certainly appear to. And this is I hate to keep harping on this expression, but it's diminishing returns. That those kinds of statements will not create more votes or more people interested in the philosophies of the left as it now is constituted. It's just going to move people over. They're going to be looking for some other political party. The Republicans, if they were not controlled by evil oligarchs, would really be able to take advantage of this. And hopefully they will be able to in spite of that. Her statement was actually, was so ridiculous, so stupid, that it reminded me of the Oz-Fetterman debate, where Fetterman just went Joe Biden, and he'd had some, physical problems, mental problems. I mean, he had a stroke, I believe.
Yeah, he can't understand language. Might be an impediment in the Senate, right?
Right. But the reason you can see that the reason why you have like Abrams and Fetterman as the figureheads is because they just don't have anyone else that they can bring forward who is either who is both remotely human. Mm-hmm. And has a kind of a mind that can function in a in a ad hoc environment. They just don't have any people. They have shills, but these people are just completely transparent.
Yeah, no independence of thought or anything. These people.
Yeah, there's just no independence. So they put people like this with the idea that look, we're still the Democratic Party. We're representing the common man. And the problem is the common man that they're representing is brain dead. So they just don't have any, they have no candidates of any interest to the American people. I mean, if you look at Abrams, Fetterman, and Biden, what is the common thread? I mean, it's senility. So, this isn't going to go anywhere. We're looking at all of the conditions are in place to really have a dramatic political shift against the oligarchs in the United States over the next couple of years. And as I've said, and it bored everyone to tears with this principle, the vaccine damage that is now getting just so visible will be the tip of the spear in that, because they're going to have to deny it. They're going to have more Jill Biden comments about, well, gee, there's going to be cancer in our future. I've seen it in a vision. This is how the sophistry they're going to be putting out will more and more reveal their actual, what really is inside them. It's the propaganda is stopping its effectiveness, and but they have to keep it up. They just have to keep going forward. There's no turning back. So as it goes forward, it just becomes something that helps expose them rather than camouflages them.
Yeah, this Moloch worshiping is certainly highlighted, revealed in the CDC's decision to add the COVID mRNA vaccine to the childhood vaccine schedule, despite it becoming clear every day that it actually harms and kills more people than it saves, particularly in regards to children, because I think the mortality rate for COVID, the official numbers, is 0.0002%. Approximately, that's 1 in 2 million. And that's also, that's counting in three quarters of those who said died from COVID. Children had chronic health conditions. Two thirds had multiple comorbidities, and 60% had life threatening or life limiting conditions. So it's arguable, you know, debatable whether COVID did them in or they succumbed or whatever. So why would you subject children to this, which is indeed still an experimental drug? Well, it's money making, right? At one level, that's why it should make a whole lot of money for Big Pharma and Pfizer, which again goes to show that it's like you're devouring your children just to make a few more bucks. And well, unfortunately, this is sort of a mindset that we've seen in modern America, particularly since the baby boomer generation. Is idea you sacrifice your children for your own well-being. It's a mindset, I guess you could, it's very common now. Abortion, a good example of that. Americans are killing almost 1 million babies a year, unborn, every year for their convenience. I've mentioned the vaccines, but not just the mRNA vaccine. It's the whole vaccine schedule thing where I think dozens, by the time age five, a typical child is injected with dozens of these vaccines. Of course, with that, we've seen an explosion of chronic illnesses that the medical industrial complex profits from. It's crippling younger generations. We have a whole this is sort of an economic system that Janet Yellen and Abrams celebrates, is that the children that do survive the womb are born, are ripped from their mother's arms and thrown in early ages, are consigned to daycare as the mothers are forced to work to cope with the cost of living, which Ms. Abrams claims shouldn't be worried about. You just kill your kids, not worry about it. Of course, we have the welfare system itself degenerating or corrupting the morals and mores of people, promoting single, particularly female head households. This spreads poverty and also, of course, degeneration, moral depravity. Of course, what we've seen recently with the Epstein case, and there's a lot of hints of widespread child trafficking and sex slavery that the regime either it takes part in or winks at. I think it's part of a governing strategy. A system that eats its young is a system that cannot survive. It's a death cult. And we see this sort of attitude very pervasive in our modern society. It's sad.
Yeah, and the Moloch flavor of the, you know, the people who were controlling information of the pandemic is really clear now. And it's important to have I think it is important to remember the actual numbers and details that we were given at the beginning of the pandemic when, you know, the Gates appointed WHO director, Teddy Unpronounceable, he came out and made the statement that 3.4% of the reported COVID-19 cases had died. Recall that?
Mm-hmm.
That was the initial position. And then they reduced it to the idea that it was only 2.3%. Now, bear in mind that only 1 in 1,000 flu victims would perish. So this was just a catastrophically high number. And how could the public contest, right? That we don't have the typical expertise to do it. However, statisticians, when they first got some data in, they did complain about this. They're saying, no, it doesn't seem to be the case. Well, now they have these serologic tests, which are on gigantic numbers. So they're very highly charged statistical units. And they have, they just brought out a couple of weeks ago the actual facts, which are not 3.4, are 2 in 100. But in fact, under 70, it is, you know, basically 1 in 2,000. It's actually not at the level of the flu. And then when you talked about the Moloch worshipers who were trying to get at the kids with a vaccine, which is now clearly producing side effects, their survival rate under 19 is 99.9997. So in other words, it's a numerical unit that is almost not visible to statistics. I mean, this is literally like zero. So to put this as just even allow children to take it, let alone to put this in the vaccine schedule, because you know perfectly well they're going to try to put it into the mandated schedules for admission to public schools, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is Moloch worship. I mean, Tim, this is not even pseudoscience at this point. It is just ludicrous. And parents should know these numbers. They should know that the first numbers that were brought out were lies. They show you cannot trust these people. It's because now we have real data, and it shows not only were we lied to, but the kids are completely safe. We won't go into the fact that that when you have that kind of a zero fatality rate, it is policy, greed. I mean, this is just genocide and Moloch worship. It's really sickening. And I hope that parents will resist with, you know, with not just with defense of their children, but at the understanding who they're dealing with. I mean, this is just the face of evil is now revealed.
Yeah. And we have the continuing Kanye West story. Apparently last week, someone out in Los Angeles held a banner over a highway that said Kanye is right about the Jews. It was this group called the Goyim Defense League.
Yeah.
And they reportedly made the Hitler salute or something. So do you think the ADL sent them out to do that?
Yeah.
So that story. Now, of course, the Goyim Defense, several members of the Goyim Defense League hung banners over the Los Angeles highway Saturday saying, honk if you know, Connery is right about the Jews. Did anyone honk?
Yeah, it's been interesting to know about that. I mean, you know, is there more skepticism of sort of the rationale that defends this undemocratic structure of so much power that the Jews have? It really is fascinating and interesting because last night, Wes' Twitter account was reinstated. Now,
yes,
Musk has said that, he fired all of the people, I guess, who were involved in the creation of the restriction, but he wasn't directly, in charge of this, which is hard to imagine, however, that he wasn't at least apprised of it before it occurred because of the, how much publicity it's gotten. So West is now free, and it's going to be interesting to see if one would hope that he would, if he's going to go this route, that he would try to do it in the most effective way, which is, we talked about this last week, where he should be trying to get First Amendment attorneys. He should be trying to get the stats. You know, I mentioned earlier that in response to someone like Roche, who years ago, said that anti-Semitism was the critical issue for her, to expose that as sophistry, you really want to have some facts on hand. And Wes could do a great job of inserting those facts into, public domain. And I hope he does that because it would really help to create a better sort of discussion concerning the nature of our democracy. But interestingly, this is all going to, in my opinion, bleed into the struggle for a free press that Musk may be involved with. Now, you can't really trust him, but on the other hand, he sure talks a good talk, and he fired all of the right people. I mean, notice he got rid of all of the individuals who had been in back of the kind of censorship that Twitter had been doing. The thing that I think will be most interesting to watch is, you have the EU. The EU have already taken the position that they're going to resist any kind of freedom. I mean, that Thierry Breton, the EU apparatchik, has said, in Europe, this bird will not fly by our EU rules. And then Musk tweeted back, the bird is free. So what could happen and would be fascinating is that if instead of the EU dominating the discussion by having rules which Twitter cannot comply to, so that they then use the censorship, that they will go to the lowest common denominator of censorship. Instead of that, what Musk should do is he should just hive Europe off, and he should say, okay, if you guys aren't going to permit free speech, We'll just, you know, like cut off your servers into our system, which incidentally is technically very simple to do. Mm-hmm. So all you need is a will. So if you will not permit free speech, then you simply will, your censorship will not only not dominate us, but we're going to cut you off from the world's communication system. We're going to expose the individuals who are ruling and who give the permission for what kind of discussion is permissible. We're just going to show the Europeans, look, if you don't want to play, fine. You're just not going to play with us. We're not going to talk to you, because that will expose them more as North Korea than as defenders of civil rights somehow. So this is all going to be very, very interesting. I don't trust Musk, but I certainly have hopes that he will help, with the momentum for a freer, discussion that the whole world is anxious for right now. And, because of the last 2 years and of the censorship that the social platforms have engaged in.
Yeah, I mean, idea that you have to police the internet or social media for hate crimes or thought crimes such as anti-Semitism, since anti-Semitism is really just any meaningful criticism of Jewish power, criticism how that power is exercised, and since anti-Semitism is effectively illegal in the West, what we really live under is an imposed philo-Semitism or Jewish supremacy. So any criticism of these things, you hear that you have the spectacle of Kanye West calling out the Jews for their inordinate control of media and how they abuse that control. And they're basically saying, if anyone criticizes it, they destroy you. And so the response of those who control the media, the Jews, is to use their control of the media to destroy Kanye West, proving his point, as he made that point.
Right.
I mean, it's like, okay.
Contradictory, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So you're, basically, it's all there for all to see. You have this Ari Emanuel, who is Rahm Emanuel's brother. He is a, CEO of Endeavor, Hollywood talent agent. he urged Apple, Spotify, and other musicians to more or less to ostracize Kanye West, put him out of business. So here you have world Jewry declaring war on Kanye West. Again, who are these people? They don't exist as a collective. Obviously, they're organized behind the scenes, they're making phone calls. And this isn't just like there's an uproar of outrage of disparate individuals who are just so incensed at what Kanye West was saying or tweeting or whatever. There is a power, exercise of power here. You need to acknowledge that any criticism of Jewish influence or power is by definition anti-Semitism. Since anti-Semitism is a sin or illegal, we cannot criticize Jews, or particularly powerful Jews, the very Jews you need to criticize, like any other person or group when they're exercising power or influence, particularly one as disruptive or as malevolent as Jews tend to be, particularly those in power. They can't bear the burden. Like I said, everyone says they're so clever, but their response to criticism is to shut it down and to engage in censorship. So much for their verbal acuity or high verbal IQ. Can they come up with a clever argument that convinces us? No, they have to shut it down. So there they are, exposed for all to see. This is what they've done. And they used to be, they practiced something called dynamic silence. They worked behind the scenes. Now they're out in the open. You have ADL coming out calling for this stuff. I heard a tweet that goes that Elon Musk should buy the ADL and fire all the Jews. Take it over. Again, this whole Twitter thing now, of course, Elon Musk has emancipated Kanye West. It just shows you even a billionaire isn't free in the system, and they have all these financial arrangements and the control of high finance. Even if a company doesn't immediately respond to their demands, they can twist the capital markets. When you have Jews running JP Morgan or BlackRock or Goldman Sachs, obviously pressure can be done behind the scenes to cut these companies off from necessary credit to do their business. And so that's why you have Adidas paying, more or less taking a $250 million hit to cancel the contract with Kanye West for his supposed anti-Semitic remarks. It's there for all to see. Now, of course, this Twitter maneuver is interesting because Twitter now opens up a venue or a platform where Congress can have other people, not just Conway, but more articulate critics of Jewish power, can now participate and express themselves and compete for public opinion. This is why they're so exercised over Elon Musk's move to take over Twitter, turn it into a free speech platform. Free speech will inevitably be anti-Semitic and racist as those terms are understood, because it opens up free critical thought, free expression. And again, you're going to hear, there's going to be a lot of criticism of the race industry and of Blacks because of crime and their behavior and how it's exploited politically. A lot of criticism of Jews because Jews enjoy immense influence in the media and finance. And if there's problems in our financial system, problems in our media, those who control it are responsible, and they're Jews, and they should be subject to criticism. How they manipulate the economy, the business practices, the policies they support, like Janet Yellen, supporting abortion as a Treasury Secretary. Why is that? Why is she opining on abortion? What does that do with the sale of Treasury bonds? Well, it's because she's Jewish, and Jewish and in today's modern Jews, Talmudic Jews, are Moloch worshippers. As you can see, over 140 Jewish organizations coming out claiming that abortion is a religious practice, and therefore it's a violation of the First Amendment if you don't have abortion on demand. So basically, it's either accept Jewish values, which is the First Amendment, or you have a Christian theocracy. Yes, that's how they view these things. So all these things kind of come into play. But Twitter, again, opens up this platform where people will freely express themselves, and no one wants to contend with the arguments. You know, they just want to shut it down.
There is the possibility. I mean, it's not likely, but there is a real possibility that this could get out of control. Because if West sticks to his guns and starts calling out his critics on specific issues, right? Then you could start having, particularly in the Black community, it would start there, where you'd have a lot of people coming out of the woodwork and going, you know, we agree with Connie. This is real. This isn't something anti-Semitism. This is the world we live in. And that could spread. You see my point here? Is that this has the potential, because of the fact that West is Black and can't really be shoehorned in as most white critics can be so easily. And at the same time, with Twitter, opening up perhaps a platform where discussions can occur, man, this could just get out of control. You could have, and if this bleeds into the vaccine damage that is going to become more and more apparent inside the inner cities, you can just see where this all goes. It goes to just open rebellion against tyranny. Open rebellion. And so this is an amazing time to be alive, where you actually have Kanye West is suddenly given this like almost unique historical opportunity to really bring about discussions of issues which everyone else is too afraid, are too limited, are too financially controlled to be able to get involved with. West has, they can't threaten him with taking away his money. He's too wealthy. I think he seems, as I have seen him talk, he seems too determined to be able to be just, swept aside with charges of anti-Semitism. In fact, I think he's well past that at this point. So now the question is how is the public going to, relate to him, and what kind of information can he bring to really further his cause? Because you see, my point is a cause is coming into light here. It isn't just one guy complaining about things that are wrong in the world. This could become a movement.
Well, it's too obvious at this point.
Movement. Yeah.
Like this Ari Emanuel statement, we need to destroy him. Well, who is we then?
Yeah, who is we?
Yeah. There's an organization here, and you're all meeting. You're all meeting and colluding? And is there an antitrust issue here where people collude to destroy someone's contractual arrangements? Can we pass a law against this? I mean, I know there's antitrust, but again, no. This speaks to the again, we talked about last time how the importance of ethnicity and understanding politics and understanding ethnic politics. And of course, Jews are the I guess the leaders in practicing ethnic politics, wrapping it as something else like freedom or something, right? I was talking to someone about a sibling about Hollywood and what's the problem with Hollywood, and I shared that quote from Joe Breen back in the 30s. He was the head of the production code. This is the time when people spoke at least more comfortably in ethnic terms. Therefore, there was a more honest approach to politics than it is today. This liberal myth where it doesn't matter. What he said of Hollywood is they're simply a rotten bunch of vile people with no respect for anything beyond making money. Here in Hollywood, we have paganism rampant in its most virulent form. Drunkenness and debauchery are commonplace. Sexual perversion is rampant. Any number of our directors and our stars are perverts. These Jews seem to think of nothing but money-making and sexual indulgence. The vilest kind of sin is common indulgence hereabouts, and the men and women who engage in this sort of business are the men and women who decide what the film fare of the nation is to be. They and they alone make the decision. 95% of these folks are Jews of the Eastern Europe lineage. They are probably the scum of the earth. And my sibling goes, well, bad people in Hollywood, that's new. No, it's not. It's not just the bad people are in Hollywood. It's the fact that Jews run Hollywood. And that to the extent that Hollywood is subversive and promotes degeneracy, it's part of their Jewish identity. It's an uncomfortable truth that we have to deal with. And unless they're put on a short leash or highly regulated, or observed and identified, they will continue doing it as they've done. So when I talk to Christians or Catholics, they lament on the state of the culture. And what's this? The transgenderism, homosexuality, abortion, all this stuff. They can never name. They can only deal with the issue, and not name the agents who are promoting it and the power dynamics and the political mechanisms, the ethnic warfare that was waged to facilitate this degenerate process. Unless you identify that group, you're not going to be able to fight it. This is something that the Catholic Church has been very weak on in the past 60 years. Was a time when we kind of understood this, and there were mechanisms, there were the demographics, there were the power relationships that check this. Now that was destroyed through indirectly, and this is how they do it. Through promoting things like integration, destroying ethnic neighborhoods, creating suburbia and promoting a consumerist culture that gradually insults our sensibilities. We're so concerned about Jewish sensibilities, supposedly, no regard for Christian or Catholic sensibilities in this country. No regard at all. In fact, they'll put you in jail in many countries if you offend Jewish sensibilities. But you can do, there's no concern with this. So it has to be addressed on those terms. If you don't address on those terms, you're not going to be able to combat this issue or deal with it. And that's the problem here, because you don't want to be called anti-Semitic. Because anti-Semitic, by definition, is just simply criticism of Jewish power or how that power is exercised. And that just simply isn't, it's not sustainable. No, it can't go on like this. And they're pushing it,
Can't go on unless they're able to genocide the,
yes,
the population.
Well, either way, it ends.
Right. I mean, you talk about the origins of Hollywood and what the intent was. I would just say anyone who's curious or who has any question about it, just go to the internet and look at the cartoon Bimbo's Initiation, which you and I have talked about 100 times. Bimbo, the term means stupid child. Is forced, and incidentally, this is the introduction of Mickey Mouse into the public consciousness. The cartoon was created by Fleischman, a Jewish Freemason, and it simply lays out exactly what show business is going to do. They trap Bimbo in a Freemason lodge. They try to dominate him and force him to join their group. He refuses, and so then they introduce a pornographic element, right? Betty Boop, who does it just a really inappropriate and vulgar sexual dance, forcing Bimbo to accede to the Freemason, kind of principles. Well, there it is, guys. This is what show business is. This is what it was set up for. The people who brought it about, I mean, and it was incremental, and they had different ways that it could slowly get into culture, but they always had the idea that it would be used for domination, intellectual domination, for propaganda. And the iPhone and the control that was used via the internet during the lockdown is just the conclusion, or not conclusion, but just part of the process that goes all the way back to the establishment of mass media, of video media, that the people who controlled it could use it to create ideas and to and just be to create their own power. So
they create a false reality.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, there's a good example of this.
Exactly right. It is. We are in a false reality that they.
I mean, a good example is like the issue of crime and racism, where in Hollywood, racism is a bigger, anti-black racism is a bigger problem than black crime. The reality is quite the opposite. There was a movie called one thing you saw. This is media. They did this kind of provocative agitprop like with Uncle Tom's Cabin in the 19th century, written by a woman who never stepped foot in the South, but it was published and sold to aggravate the situation. The same thing with To Kill a Mockingbird, right? Where this portrayal, the idea that the problem is you have too many white women chasing down black men, and then they're so ashamed of it that you're gonna hang a black man for the crime. How these things are spun. There was a movie called A Time to Kill that was made in the 1990s. And it's a story of a black girl who was kidnapped and assaulted and raped by two white rednecks. And the father, enraged by this, ends up killing the two her assailants, and is put on trial and acquitted for it, despite the fact that he shot them in broad daylight in the open and wounded a deputy and things like this. And the movie is all about racism and these things. This is made in the 90s. And I'm reading about the movie, and of course it was inspired by a true story. And the true story was actually reversed. It was two white girls who were raped by a black guy.
Yeah, slight difference, Jim.
On parole, by the way.
Yeah, that's just a tiny difference.
Let's twist the story around. Let's change reality. Yeah. So again, they change reality. And it was Henry Ford who said that films are a rehearsal for revolution. And that, the power, it's captivating itself. And it's the power of media, particularly in the movie theater and these things. But again, you have to look at these things, ethnic motivation. Yeah, so my point is you have to look at the ethnic motivation behind these things. There was interesting revelation this week by Democrat Representative Jamie Raskin, again, who is a Democrat from Maryland, who's also a Jewish. And this might factor into his politics, right? His ethnicity might factor into some of his politics. He's the one that, he was a former law professor at American University who just wrote off the LA riots in the 90s. You shouldn't make a racial thing out of it. Be too concerned about it because of justice. But then he gets all excited over the January 6th protesters. he's calling it insurrection and these things. So the double standard. But he was talking about Russia. And this is interesting because a lot of people made this observation about why the West and NATO is hell-bent on breaking up and fighting, splintering Russia, challenging Russian power. And he says, polls show reduced support for U.S. economic aid to Ukraine government. And Democratic Representative Jamie Raskin is justifying the military campaign against the nuclear armed Russia as a war in defense of woke values. Moscow right now is the world center of anti-feminism, anti-gay, anti-trans hatred, as well as a homeland for replacement theory of export. Raskin, Maryland, said in an October 25th statement that he was issued, that was issued after 30 progressive withdrew their plea for peace talks. His letter said, Moscow right now is the hub of corrupt tyranny, censorship, authoritarian repression, police violence, propaganda, government lies, disinformation, planning for war crimes, and supporting Ukraine. We are opposing these fascist views and supporting the urgent principles of democratic pluralism. Ukraine is not perfect, but its society is organized on radically different principles of democracy and freedom. Of course, it's a Jewish government that's been installed by NATO in the Ukraine. A vast majority of Ukrainians are stupid internet.
This meeting is being recorded.
Okay, we're back. So yeah, but Jimmy Raskin basically he's complained that Russia is too Orthodox Christian and conservative, and that's one of the reasons why we have to prolong the war in the Ukraine. So basically, we have a Jewish congressman criticizing Russia for being too Christian or reflecting Christian values. Something we should take note of, though. Again, that's it's something.
I can't even now.
Okay.
I had this one point I wanted to make because I was quite amused by it. You had the unfortunate attack on Pelosi's husband.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And so the individual is a mentally ill hippie who would often protest against war wearing no clothes. He's in the Castro district. Now, what amused me was the tweet that came out immediately after the event from Lawrence Tribe, the Jewish social critic and columnist. And he wrote that this is nightmarish. I wish Pelosi a full and rapid recovery. The far right has normalized the use of violence against even the families of public officials with whom someone might disagree. Now, this was Lawrence Tribe. Now, if you've seen pictures of this individual with his, you know, long hair and body paint and no clothes on, you'll know that he's not MAGA. You know, this is not a normal MAGA outfit. But my point is that Tribe was an advocate of the violence that BLM and Antifa hosted yes. on the nation. Now, for him to claim that the far right has normalized the use of violence, I would really like to see just a statistical description of how much violence was normalized vis-a-vis the BLM and Antifa riots that mm-hmm. Tribe thought was a great idea, as opposed to violence against public officials or anybody else by the far right, either, yeah. either in fact or just in, I mean, so this is a preposterous and ludicrous bit of sophistry that I hope Tribe gets called on by other pundits.
It's that, I mean, either they have no self-awareness or they don't care. You know, they yeah. think they can, because they don't, again, with Twitter coming back online, they may have to worry about it, because immediately if you put this on Twitter, he'd get thousands of, you know, people calling him out on this hypocrisy. And I don't know. Again, another thing is, you know, you can ascribe a political motivation to this person. I don't know. He got broke into the house. If the story is to be, take the story at face value. I'm surprised that the police don't have any security. Apparently they spend more on refrigerators than they do on home security. So, you know, again, another thing made me consider, Pelosi and her political allies have contributed greatly to turning San Francisco and the rest of the country into a shithole. So not surprising that they step in some of the crap, at least get some of the crap thrown at them. I mean,
when you see the pictures of the guy with his naked body and some kind of little paper crown on and his long hair, what you're seeing is the release of mental illness mm-hmm. That has gone on in San Francisco for the last 40 years. This is of course, looking at the political leadership in San Francisco, we know who is actually, you know, producing this. So, you know, another example of just the diminishing return sophistry that is transparent, and hopefully more people will, you know, be enraged by Tribe's comments than propagandized by it.
Well, isn't the doing away of cash bail, the release of prisoners, violent felons from prison, I mean, isn't that unleashing violence on the public for a political reason? And shouldn't that be
normalizing? It's making it legal.
I know. Yeah. So I mean, he's a victim of crime. Well, there are thousands and thousands of additional victims of crime due to policies and other liberal Democrats' policies. You know, exactly. Now it's supposed to matter more because her husband was assaulted. You know, again, you think of all the money they've stolen in the past 40 years in politics, they could afford a better home security system.
It was amazing to me that there wasn't security. I still don't understand that.
I don't.
Over time, I think the story may, you know, had to have kind of unforeseen aspects to it that we don't really aren't aware of at the moment. But it just seemed unreal to me.
Yeah, nor has explained how he gained access to the house.
Yeah, that makes no sense. But so anyway.
Okay, Joe.
All right, Jim. A lot of technical problems, but I'm sure next week it'll be smooth sailing.
Y'all patch it together. Hopefully it's comprehensible.
No, all right, brother.
Take it. Enjoy the weekend. Bye-bye.